T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Get to Sal in a moment. Been kind of all over the place today. Maybe somebody spiked my coffee or something. I don't know. Got a lot of energy today. St. Louis beats San Jose 5-1. The Blues in their first Stanley Cup final since 1970. Ryan O'Reilly had 3 assists. Game 1, Boston, Monday. The USA lost to Canada 3-0 in the World Championships. They'll play Russia in the quarters tomorrow. Ottawa interviews Patrick Roy for the head coaching position. The Raptors pull even with the Bucks, a 120-102 win over Milwaukee. Just the second time this season they've lost back-to-back games. Tyler Kroft, a broken foot. The report is 3 to 4 months. Cole Beasley, Mitch Morse, core muscle surgery a few weeks ago. News on the Bills broadcasting front. Eric Wood, the new color analyst, joining John Murphy in the broadcast booth this season. Ndamukong Suh to sign a 1-year deal with Tampa. And those are your sports headlines.
Headlines brought to you by Northtown Honda. Come experience the best way to purchase a car. Easy to get to from all points in Western New York. Start shopping today at northtownhonda.com. Sal is standing by on our West Air hotline. He was at OTA yesterday. It was open to the media. He was there for Sean McDermott, Josh Allen, all the interviews. If you missed anything, leave about 45 minutes to go through the injury rundown at WGR550.com. Good morning, Mr. Capaccio. How are you?
Yeah, that's about what it is. I had to go back and re-listen to – normally I can remember what Coach McDermott said or maybe look at some tweet, but I literally had to go back and listen to everything he said about every injury because there were so many that I had to make sure I got it right for the article. It's pretty crazy and I think a little bit, I would say, unusual for the start of OTAs. Although, here's where I want to caution fans. They are going to be overly cautious this time of year with anything, right? I think the alarming part is that you've already had guys that had surgery that are out or, in the case of Kroft, the broken foot.
Yeah, it's funny. When I listened back to the whole thing, Sal, and it almost sounded like it was a Wednesday in a game week. You know, when he stands up before he takes questions from you guys, he goes through the list of who's not practicing that day and who might be on the injury list, and it sounded exactly like a Wednesday in a game week.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And, you know, if it was a Wednesday of a game week, maybe there would be a guy or two on there you're like, okay, well, he can practice. He's ready to go. Or if it was getting closer to a game, you know, he'd be more probable than they would. I don't even know if they even have probable anymore. You know what I mean? The guys would be playing. But it did read like that. And, you know, I think the good news is, obviously, Tyler Kroft is the bad news. It's the headline of the day as far as the injuries are concerned. He's going to be out a while. The good news is that it seems like, you know, from all indications, they're going to get Beasley and Morse back in due time. And, you know, this is something that they'll just be able to recover from and be back on the field, hopefully before the end of all these OTAs and spring workouts, if you will.
It's interesting that you think about guys that are injury-prone, Sal. We only think about injuries as occurring between September and December. You know, a lot of guys are banged up right about now, and as long as they're back for training camp or even back for the preseason or opening day, we forget about them and push them off as if they're always durable and they're not broken down. But, you know, it's the nature of the beast.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing is, Jeremy, I don't know if you see the story last week that Adam Gase is he didn't have a rookie minicamp. He actually didn't have the guys on the field. He said the risk versus reward wasn't good enough because of injuries. And it's caused a little bit of a debate in, you know, media circles and things like that, and people saying, you know, is this right? You know, shouldn't rookies be on the field? Do you have this opportunity? And he gave them, he put them through a, not a seminar, I can't remember, an orientation. But they didn't do any work on the field. And, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, any of these injuries, I don't remember if anything is specifically related to rookie minicamp, but that goes to show this time of year things can't happen and coaches do worry about it. But Sean McDermott's response to that sort of thing yesterday was basically, I would rather have a mentally and physically tough football team than one that, I think he said, you know, goes out, plays golf every day. No offense, Jeremy.
Let me tell you how mentally tough golf can make you.
And, you know, isn't ready to play, basically. And, you know, you can find that quote in there. I don't remember exactly how he phrased it, but he did say it's a delicate balance, and it is something that coaches have to weigh. And it's not lost on Sean McDermott. It's not lost on anybody down at One Bills Drive, but that is the balance you have to have between having that opportunity to get out on the field and play versus knowing that you could have guys that get banged up there this time of year doing that.
Is the Croft injury a problem? If so, how much?
Okay, so whereas a lot of people look at it as, oh my gosh, let's go out, let's do this right away, I'm not opposed to the team going out and trying to trade for Kyle Rudolph, but I would first see and look at this as an opportunity for Dawson Knox, an opportunity for Tommy Sweeney, an opportunity for Jason Kroom to step up and show what they have. I think you have to do that first. You have to allow for that opportunity before saying, let's just not count on them, go out and get a guy and plug him in there. You drafted two guys, young guys, who obviously if you drafted them, you plan on them being a part of your organization and, you know, hopefully filling a role. Well, maybe they can fill that role earlier rather than later. I would wait on it. I would see what, you know, those guys can do. And if we get a few weeks down the road here and they're not necessarily filling those roles and stepping up quite like you want and progressing like you want, then I would look into other things. There was a report today from Field Yates. The Bills put a claim in on Jordan Leggett, but they did not get him. He went to, I think, the Buccaneers, maybe it was.
Yeah,
but
Tampa, yep.
That's what Field Yates had reported. So they're obviously looking out there, but what I'm saying is I wouldn't give up any assets quite yet or pay big money quite yet for anyone until I at least gave these guys opportunities and saw what they could do.
I know it's OTAs and it's the 90-man roster and all that, but they really did the waiver claim is interesting, Sal. So with Croft out, they still have six tight ends on the roster, I think?
Man, I got to go look now.
Because I thought
five.
I thought it was seven, actually, with Croft.
Jake Fisher was released.
Oh, okay. Because I was wondering about numbers and why with Croft out would they have to pursue yet another person to have another tight end. They're just filling in numbers at that point.
Yeah, I mean, probably, unless they really like somebody. I mean, I don't think you put a waiver claim in on Jordan Leggett or anybody else if you don't actually think the guy can be a part of your roster. You know, there are other tight ends out there. They're not signing every single person to come in. So it might be something with numbers, but it might be the fact that there's a guy out there that they have, you know, seen and have scouted and like. And it might also be because they haven't quite liked what they've seen from maybe the guys they have there, but they're not ready to cut bait yet.
Someone asked me about the Morris and Beasley injuries. Do we know a time frame on that? Were those guys injured after they signed, before they signed? Is there any time frame on that?
Well, there's no time frame given, but McDermott did indicate that, you know, they'll hopefully get him back as soon as possible, and they'll be able to, you know, be ready for everything they do. And like I said, I don't know if that means by the end of the spring. I don't know if that means by training camp. I can't imagine these are injuries that weren't, if they were already hurt when they did physicals, when they signed, you know, you got to get a physical and everything
right. Yeah. Before
you sign. If there was an injury then, if there was a case, they would clean it up. And, you know, there might be something that they got to the workouts, you know, the phase one stuff, and maybe something was bothering them, and they said, let's take care of it now because it won't, you know, then we can get you back on the field. So I'm not exactly sure, but I can't imagine that it was something that they knew about from last season and they just waited till a few weeks ago, because McDermott did say those surgeries took place a few weeks ago.
Okay. The one other thing I want to bring up for sure was Jerry Hughes. It's funny. So we had you on the show yesterday because the news had come down about the two-year extension, and in listening to Sean McDermott with you guys yesterday, the same discussion was taking place when it comes to Jerry Hughes. It was the sack stats versus, I believe the way McDermott phrased it was something about affecting the quarterback, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's what he does. I've had very little of the negative feedback from fans on social media about the signing. You're always going to get that no matter what move is made, sign, trade, cut, whatever. But I did get a couple people and, you know, who made arguments of, well, you know, his sack totals have been down. He hasn't produced in that regard. And, you know, my response is, but there's a lot more to these guys' jobs than getting on the stat sheet. And it's an argument I make about Star Latulele. Now, I'll tell you, I mean, $10 million is a lot to pay for Star Latulele. I get it. I totally get that argument. But I think when it's framed in, well, he's not on the stat sheet, that's when I say, but you have to understand what he does, and then you can decide if he's worth the money because he's actually doing what he does. In Jerry's case, you know, he does impact the game. And there are stats for it as far as quarterback pressures and quarterback hurries that you can look at. And, of course, sacks are the one thing. But when I look back and think about last year and think about what Jerry's meant to this defense, I mean, he is the guy that teams really, I think, have to account for. And even Mike Tannenbaum, I believe, said that on TV yesterday when talking about his extension, that, you know, when he was with the Jets or the Dolphins or whatever, the Dolphins, that's the guy they had the game plan for. They had to know where he was. And I think that's the ultimate compliment from any offensive coordinator or front office person.
Sal with us on our Wester hotline. You can read his articles, excuse me, from the OTAs at WGR550.com. I want to get to Josh Allen in a second, but generally speaking, now, I don't want you to try and top the guy who said Nathan Peterman was slinging dimes at the Raiders OTAs, but what observations did you make yesterday watching practice?
I thought Josh looked pretty comfortable and good. Like, you could tell, you know, he's running the show, right? I mean, it's he's hitting the ground running. As far as he is concerned, he had a really good two-minute drill, moved the team down the field, starting O, starting D, got into it was a two-minute drill. Yeah, not a red zone, it was a two-minute drill. And he threw a touchdown in the back of the end zone to Zay Jones, and it looked to me, I don't know if it was, it looked to me like it was very similar to the play in which him and Zay had the miscommunication in Miami last year. Remember that one? Mm-hmm. When Zay was wide open at the back of the end zone, it looked like the same play. Mm-hmm. And Zay caught this one for a touchdown. He had another nice, really long throw to Robert Foster. Foster made a couple of really nice grabs that I noticed. I was focused on who lined up where in the offensive line now.
Yep.
Obviously, albeit Mitch Morse is out and Russell Bodine is out. But what was interesting to me was it wasn't Spencer Long who went to center then. It was John Feliciano. Now, John Feliciano does have experience as a backup center with the Raiders, but he didn't really play there that much. He backed up Rodney Hudson in practice a lot, but he really played guard mostly. So what I'm reading into that, and I don't know, this is my own feeling on this, is maybe they really, really want Long at guard, and they feel that that's where he's going to stick.
Yeah.
So they don't want to waste the reps on him at center. You know what I mean? So I think that to me might be an indication of that. Ty Nsekhe played right tackle. Cody Ford came in with the second group. Deion Dawkins was at left tackle. Quentin Spain was the right guard with Spencer Long on the left side.
With Josh, I thought, listening to his comments, Sal, one of the things he was asked about was just, you know, where he's at. How comfortable does he feel in year number two? And sure, and his answer made perfect sense. I mean, right? He's just, do you think he looks a little more confident or looks any different because he's got that year under his belt and now, you know, he's got same OC, some targets are back that he knows with, just he has a better handle on everything?
Honestly, no, because I've never thought the kid ever looked like he wasn't confident.
Yeah.
Like, Josh Allen has always stepped. Josh Allen, to me, the minute he walked into Buffalo, he looked to me like he's a quarterback and he's a leader. I think he thought that he should, you know, he came in thinking he's going to win the starting job last year, which he should, right? I mean, I think he's probably disappointed when he wasn't in the starter and he battled for that. So, no, but that's not meaning that I think that he looks not confident. I just think he looked the same last year because he came in looking like a leader and looking like a quarterback. And then as the season went on, you know, we heard a lot about how he really progressed in that area as well. He learned a lot from Anderson and Barkley as well. But he did talk about same OC, you know, same system and all that helping him. And like I said, yesterday just looked like he did. The one thing I did notice, like he wasn't a rookie out there turning around asking his coach a question every play. You know, I mean, he was out there and he's running the show and everything was kind of seamless. Guys, I've never seen this. Have you? I don't know how many OTAs you've ever been to, but I know I've been to a lot, and I've never once ever until yesterday seen coaches wearing headsets as if it was a game.
Why were they doing that? You didn't have a chance to ask him. You met with McDermott before practice. Okay.
Well, I just think that my guess is they're simulating. They're hitting the ground running. They're getting to a point where they want to start. They might want to work on something specific with communication. You know, I don't know. There's a purpose for everything with Sean McDermott. That might be it. Maybe there's one detail he's trying to iron out now that he figured out last year, or maybe he just wants to get everybody already used to it. Look, this is not a young team anymore. I mean, they might be young at key positions like quarterback and middle linebacker still, like they were last year. But this is a team now that has veteran players. They signed offensive linemen that have over 300 games experience, basically played total in the National Football League. And it seems to me like they're in a spot where they feel we need to be way ahead on May 21st now than we have been the last 2 years. And that's probably an indication of that.
Hey, one other thing on Josh. Did he was asked about Derek Anderson. Any thoughts you could share from what he said about Anderson retiring and how that might impact him?
Yeah, you know, he said that he has a great relationship with him. He said he's texted with Derek Anderson, and that the line of communication is always open. And I'm, you know, basically Anderson told him that, hey, you need anything, you let me know. You know, have to reach out, talk football, whatever. He'll do that. So he's very complimentary. Obviously, he said he learned a lot from, you know, Derek being there. But, you know, I think Josh, I'll go back to, you know, the question you asked me earlier. I think Josh is comfortable no matter who's around him.
Yeah.
As much as I think for all of us, we could see the difference in him. I could certainly see the difference. Josh Allen does not lack for confidence. He's going to go out there, and it doesn't matter who his quarterback coach is or who the backups are with him, all the mentors, all that kind of thing. Josh Allen has enough confidence that he's going to step on the field and feel that he can get the job done.
You want to have some fun? Jeremy's got a fun exercise for us.
I'm down for fun exercise.
Are you all about fun? Okay.
All about fun, even though I really can't believe you have no idea what pickleball actually was.
I thought pickleball was man in the middle. Like I said, like a rundown in baseball. I thought that you're caught in a pickle.
We all played pickle in the middle. I played that with my son, too, when he was three. But you know what? Pickleball is like a really popular thing now that people play.
Never heard of it.
Wow.
Besides, okay. And by the way, I thought you were all about the sauce, but that's another story for another day.
So the exercise is this. Jeremy Bergman of NFL.com has a piece up. One burning question for each NFL team. And the Bills' burning question is, I'm looking right at it, and I want to know, what do you think it is? The burning question.
Sal, you want to go first?
I think the easy answer would be, will Josh Allen, you know, step mm-hmm. up into year two? But for you to ask this tells me it's not that easy.
Right. It's not something as simple as, it's more of a decision that they will make.
Okay, because, so I think, will they move on from LeSean McCoy?
It is who's the odd man out at running back. This is, I want, you know, Sal, we talked about it at length the other day. This is not going away until opening day or maybe even the deadline, right? The trade deadline, because it does not seem like NFL analysts want to get off of this conversation about the Bills maybe having an odd man out at running back and maybe it being McCoy.
Okay, so it's great that you asked me this because I want to make a couple points on this. Number one, LeSean McCoy was a starting running back yesterday in OTAs. Like, I mean, he lined up as the number one guy. He took the handoffs and, you know, he got most of the reps. But it's funny because, yes, this conversation, it might not go away, but after the injury rundown was given, and Sean McDermott said Frank Gore had a foot and ankle injury, and he wasn't going to participate. So I'm sitting next to Josh Reed of Channel 4. And Josh looks at me and says, you know, everybody makes this big deal about moving on from McCoy and the running back. These things have a way of working themselves out. Suddenly he said, what if you had already done that, and then Frank Gore had actually hurt? Are you starting T.J. Yeldon? Are you starting Devin Singletary? And there's a point in there, which is, you know, yes, we could talk all we want about, and people have, because of, well, who's the guy? Look, guys get hurt. And if you're comfortable with that happening, because what if Frank Gore did get hurt? And by the way, we went out to practice. Frank Gore was practicing because Frank Gore's a warrior. He didn't miss practice. He was a little bit limited. T.J. Yeldon was actually had a groin injury, and he sat out, and we found that out a little bit later. But you guys, you understand my point, which is there's a lot of talk about this, but these things kind of do have a way of sorting themselves out. We don't know what's going to happen between now and training camp or even opening day. So why make a hasty decision when you kind of have to, you should let it play out and not put the cart before the horse, so to speak.
Hey, I think Bill Barnwell had a piece up at ESPN.com. It's his AFC to-do list. One thing that he thinks each AFC team should do. And his Bills thing was you should move on from LeSean McCoy. And I guess this would have been a valid discussion earlier in the offseason. If you needed more cap space and free agency, we would be talking about moving on from LeSean McCoy. If you thought you could get a good draft pick in return, which would have helped you in the draft, you could talk. But now there's just no need to have this discussion. There's no reason to do it now. You know, what value are you getting for him in a trade? And if you do trade him, okay, it's a 2020 draft pick. I just, there's no need to do it now. Sal, you're right. I didn't even think about what if one or two guys, look at all the rash of running back injuries they had last season. And if one or two guys gets hurt,
right,
you keep them. Worst case scenario, if he looks terrible in the preseason, you'd probably just cut him at that point. What would you get for him in a trade? But there's just no need to move on from him at this point. Why would you do it?
That's exactly
it's
the
not
point
blocking
I've been
anything, you know? It's not stopping you from doing something.
Yeah, it's exactly the point I've been making for 9 months. Tell me what the benefit is. Now, I went on with you the other day, and I said this exact thing. Someone emailed me and said, well, couldn't a benefit be that they could roll over the cap space they're saving?
Yeah, they could, right?
And I'm like, yeah they could, but you don't make decisions based on stuff like that. Like, you're talking about saving a rollover in 2020 of $6.4 million when my response to the emailer was, look, they had over $80 million in cap space this year. They spent like half of that. They're going to have $70 million next year, 60 or 70. They're not going to spend all of that. Like, they don't need that space in 2020 either necessarily to do. You don't make a decision based on that. So I think people are really reaching is why they should, why they should. I think you should be thinking about why they shouldn't more than anything as far as that. And yesterday, and the point Josh made to me before we went out, and then we get out there and Yeldon's hurt, I'm thinking, you're right. What if Frank Gore was?
Sure.
We'd be watching Devin Singletary run the ball today.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you want to look at it, at the very least, it's your $6 million or whatever it is cap space insurance policy. And again, my biggest thing is it's not keeping the Bills or hurting the Bills at this point to have him on the roster. If it was hurting them in some way, shape, or form, cap, trade value, but fine. Those discussions are moot now because free agency is pretty much over and the draft is over. So there's just no point to it. So.
That's right. So I look, anything could happen. Never say never. I'd be stunned. I'd be very, very surprised unless like someone really was desperate and called Brandon Bean and said, hey, I'll give you a really high draft pick or something like that.
Right.
I mean, I just can't see it happening right now. I think all bets are off once we get to training camp, though, and we start to sort things out and see where guys fall.
Or if there's injuries, another team has a run of injuries at running back and they're looking for somebody.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Capaccio. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, guys.
Sal's articles are up for your perusal at WGR550.com. He's got the complete rundown of guys that were banged up yesterday and information from the open practice at OTAs. I think the next one is tomorrow, but it is closed to the media. Or maybe they just see stretching in the very beginning of it. Anyway, Sal's segment brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? Let's get your win cash code. See if we can give away $1,000. This is very simple. Hopefully you've been playing along. If not, you can start in now. We give you a code word. You text it to 72881, and you have a chance to win $1,000. The code word is salary. S-A-L-A-R-Y. So text salary right now to 72881. You have until 9 o'clock to send it in. When you text it in, keep in mind there that message and data rates may apply. We will have more code words coming up, let's see, with us about an hour from now. Four more this afternoon with Shope and the Bulldog. We're playing all this week, and we're playing all again next week. So you still have a lot of chances to win. So salary, text it right now to 72881. We'll see if we can get you $1,000 in the National Win Cash Contest from WGR. It's a
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Your headlines, the St. Louis Blues are on to the Stanley Cup Final. Blues this year with not a great season. Here they are, 99 points this year. Not even a 100-point team,
yeah,
right? And they're on to the Cup Final. Their goaltending's been good, not great. The edge in this series between Boston and St. Louis, at least as of right now, is in goal. Rask has been great. Mm-hmm. Binnington has been fine.
Better than San Jose.
Yes, San Jose had the worst goaltending in the playoffs, by the numbers of it. So San Jose's out. And no Carlson, no Hurdle in last night's game. Blues, their first final since 1970, where they played the Bruins.
Got swept. So,
there's a Blues fan out there that today wakes up and says,
revenge.
Finally.
Revenge.
We get our chance.
Only took 49 years, but we got a shot.
Right.
You know?
Somebody's got a letter to the editor
crazy.
From 1970.
That's
says,
crazy.
We'll get the Bruins next year. And 49
it'd be like,
years
it'd
later.
It'd be like the Mets playing the A's, and I'd sit here and tell you, going to make up for 73 this time, baby. Yeah. What'd you get for blowing a 3-2? Anyway, where'd you leave off?
Just the Blues.
USA lost to Canada in the World Championships yesterday. They're still in the quarterfinals, Team USA. They will take on Russia tomorrow. Patrick Roy interviewed for the coaching job in Ottawa. And the reports continue to indicate that Edmonton's front runner is Dave Tippett. That might actually happen by this weekend. Tyler Kroft has a broken foot, so he's out for a while for the Bills. Ian Rappaport from NFL Network says 3 to 4 month recovery period. Cole Beasley and Mitch Morse also among those that did not practice yesterday. Sean McDermott said they had core muscle surgery, both of them, a few weeks ago. And Ndamukong Suh, Gerald McCoy is no longer a Buck, so Tampa moves on to Ndamukong Suh. They're working on a one-year deal for him. Toronto beat Milwaukee last night in the NBA playoffs, 120-102. So that series is tied at 2. Warriors are going to have to wait at least 2 more games to find out who they will play in the finals. Baseball, the Yankees pummeled Baltimore. The Jays beat Boston. The Mets beat Washington. And the Bisons blanked Rochester. Your headlines brought to you by Smith Boys Marine Sales, your number one source for boating in Western New York.
Cleveland looks like they're getting the 2021 NFL draft. So it goes from Nashville, party town, to Vegas, party town.
Where else was it? Was it Chicago?
Yeah, Chicago.
And was it in Philly?
Yes.
Okay.
Cleveland.
Yeah.
All right.
Cleveland's a happening place, man.
Well,
they got Baker Mayfield.
It finally goes to Cleveland, and their pick won't be in the top five anymore.
Low, yeah. I'm trying to think who would have had the highest pick. Yeah, Cleveland is the place to be now, right? It's like all of a sudden Cleveland is the buzz of the NFL. Everything is revolving around Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
Their fan base is pumped. They've got star power on their roster. Could win the division this year. Mayfield's in the discussion for like MVP odds. All these different things are happening in Cleveland. It's a great, cannot believe we're saying like it's a great time to be a Browns fan.
This is what happened with the Rams, right? The Rams had a good run in year one with Goff. They made the playoffs and they lost. And it became all about, oh, it's the Rams' time. And then they go to the Super Bowl and they lose. You know, the Rams did accomplish more, and they had McVay for a full season of success and offensive success. And Kitchens hasn't done that yet, but you know, if they have a good season, it's all aboard the Browns train probably for a couple years, because when you're that young at quarterback and you can pay other positions, you're just in a good spot. My goal for the Bills this year, I've said this a few times, is to, at this time next year, be the Browns. Be the team that everybody wants to see, that everyone's giving too much credit to. Maybe even they're too high on.
Maybe it's a pump the brakes thing. You know what? I was curious. You brought up the Rams. Like, one of the things that's different about the Browns, I wonder how, I'm trying to think, like, how do Browns fans are pumped about Baker Mayfield. Like, I'm trying to think of some of the younger quarterbacks. Obviously, Chiefs fans are delighted about what Mahomes did. How do Eagles fans feel about Wentz? How do Rams fans feel about Goff? I don't think Rams feel about Goff the way Browns fans feel about Mayfield, even though Goff just went to a Super Bowl.
Well, I think Mayfield's better.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So how do Rams fans feel about their guy? And Eagles fans are sitting there going, should we have kept Nick Foles? Like, Wentz was good.
I'm sure that there are, I mean, the guy won the Super Bowl, so I'm sure that in Philadelphia there's some conversation about who they should have kept, right?
Yeah.
And had to be, even though one guy is a top pick and the other guy is a journeyman who's now with the Jags.
Right.
Sure. Jets fans on Sam Darnold, probably.
I think, honestly, they're where we are.
Sure.
I think they're pretty close to where we are. The narrative is kind of similar, really.
Yeah, the only thing that's different is, and John Clayton said this very matter-of-factly, that Darnold is ahead of Allen. He said the difference between the Bills and the Jets is that right now, Sam Darnold's ahead of Josh Allen.
Hmm.
Which,
maybe.
Sure, I mean, that's just an opinion. It's just,
if it is, I feel it's kind of slight. I mean, I don't think he's that far ahead of him.
No, he finished the season very strongly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the game here, he was good.
Yes, he was. Reasonably good. I mean, he threw 17 touchdowns to Allen's 10.
Yeah.
Allen would have run for a bunch more.
Yep.
They both threw a bunch of picks, more than they'd probably like to this year. Right. When you're doing is this team ahead of that team, what are you really measuring? You know, you're trying to forecast where they are. And if you're forecasting them, what are the odds that Sam Darnold is the answer for the Jets? I would say it's exactly the same as the odds that Josh Allen is the answer for the Bills.
Yeah, so, you're still hoping more than anything else.
Yeah.
And trying to, you know, you're looking at things that you think were positive indications. If I'm a Jets fan, you know, I know what we've said about Josh Allen. You know, and that's why I thought about Mayfield, because I think obviously Mayfield's in his own category. You know, he's far ahead of Josh Allen. He's far ahead of Sam Darnold. Rosen has a rough year and Arizona trades him. Mason Rudolph may never see the field. So, you know, Mayfield's in his own zip code. But I don't know. If I'm a Jets fan about Darnold, I honestly feel I'd be saying a number of things that we said about Josh Allen. Now, Darnold got off to a better start you know, his opener was good, really good in Detroit. But then he hit a stretch in the season where he was bad for about like a three-week-ish stretch. There were maybe one or two Miami games in there where he was throwing interceptions. He wasn't completing passes. I honestly watched some of his games and thought, I'll give the Jets credit. They're not asking Darnold to do a lot. He's getting the ball out. He's throwing a lot of short routes, very safe passes. You know, they're trying to manage the game with him. And then he really got into a stretch where he wasn't good. And there was talk in New York like, hey, maybe the stuff we would be saying, right? Maybe it's not a bad idea if you kind of just take Sam out, put McCown in, let Darnold be on the sideline, watch McCown, get a breather, you know, just kind of do a quick little reset. Now, they didn't have to because Darnold ends up getting hurt. And then he comes back from the injury and he looks better. He's better than he was before he got hurt, which is exactly what we said about Josh Allen. He seemed more confident. He's making plays. He had a really good second half in the game here that the Jets won, made a couple of really nice throws downfield, and he closed the season better. So that's why I think if you're a Jets fan, you know, you might be worried about Adam Gase and what's going on with the organization, and you might be worried about a whole bunch of other things. You might just be worried, you know, being a Jets fan. But I think with Darnold, I think you're really in the same area. There were some positives you saw. He got valuable playing experience. They went out and got him some weapons to help the offense in year number two. There's a little bit of a difference there where you say, okay, they brought in a coach they hope is going to unlock some more in Sam Darnold. But I think you're kind of where we are. You're feeling good about what you saw. Kid got his feet wet. Now let's see what kind of a jump up in year two. And they're sitting there thinking, hey, can we be the second best team in the division? You know, maybe we'll beat the Dolphins are worse. The Patriots are best. Jets fans are thinking the kid takes a jump up. Can we be second in the East? 9 wins. Can we get in wild card contention this year as a Jets fan? That's what they're thinking. That's us. I think it's almost identical what they're thinking.
Sure, that sounds right. Kid, and they're both thinking,
they're trying to help the kid out with the coach, with Le'Veon Bell, right? Let's see what the kid does in year two.
Well, the other thing is both teams are looking at the Patriots and saying, are they ever coming back? When are they coming back to the pack?
Right. That's why I think it was, you know, the whole thing the other day about Pete Prisco picking the Bills to win the division in 2020. I mean, you know, I'm not even sure. The scenario that would have to unfold for that to happen would be Josh Allen takes a massive leap forward. Like, he becomes Baker Mayfield. You know, he throws for a whole bunch of yards. The offense is really good. You know, the defense is top five. Wow, the Bills surprise a whole bunch of people. And then there's a drop off from Tom Brady and the Patriots. But there's anyway, I didn't want to go overboard with that. There's a long way to go to get to that. But yeah, I think honestly, Browns fans are going into the season thinking, we're going to win the division. We're going to be in the playoffs this year. Jets fans and Bills fans are thinking, hey, if our young guy takes a good step up in year two, hopefully we can be in playoff contention in December. What did you just say to me last hour when we were picking the Bills? Hey, if you're 7-5 going into the Baltimore game, would you take that? And I said, absolutely. I think most Bills fans would. That's the difference between Browns fans and Jets and Bills fans. They're thinking playoffs. They expect to win. They expect to be there. We're going, hey, knock on wood, if the kid looks good this year, maybe we're in contention in December. Maybe we're in the hunt and we play meaningful December football games. That's the difference between the franchises right now.
That and the coach and how you feel about the coach and the discord at the GM position.
Yeah. Well,
there's a really strange story. They're not going to hire a firm to help them find a GM.
No, they're not using a search firm or a headhunter. Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to ask Peter Schrager what he thinks.
I don't know the whole – I don't get that. That was a weird story yesterday. Peter Schrager works at NFL Network.
And he's a Jets fan.
Yeah, and I think he even is based or maybe lives in the New York metropolitan area. Anyway, somebody tweeted out that the Jets – one of the Jets, I think, reporters maybe, one of the guys who covers the team, tweeted out something about how they're talking to him, and it sounded like in some kind of front office capacity. Now, there have been – remember there was – well, first off, they're going to supposedly hire the guy from the Eagles who's friends with Gase to be their GM. Then there was a story about Daniel Jeremiah, who is on NFL Network. Maybe the Jets are just interested in NFL Network people. Yeah. There was a story about Daniel Jeremiah that they'd bring him in scouting or some front office capacity. Then this thing about Schrager, they're going to ask him about GM candidates. And then somebody else tweeted out and said the only time they've talked to Peter Schrager was about his involvement in preseason telecasts. So I don't know what's going on with that. I think that's really strange. However, you know, look, I mean, as much as, you know, things have not gone well here over the years, I mean, as a Jets fan, you just expect they're the Mets of the NFL. You just expect bad things to happen. There's a lot of talk down there about ownership being a mess because of Christopher Johnson and, you know, the backfighting that was going on, and Gase wins the power struggle. And here's the guy who says, I just want to coach. I don't want to be GM. But he trades Darren Lee, and he's always, you know, he's making roster moves. They fired a scout, so he's already making changes in the Jets organization, even though he's the interim GM and doesn't want to have the job. It's a very strange time for the New York Jets these days. 803-0550 to join us this morning, 888-550-2550. Father's Day is coming up next month, and we have a fantastic contest for you to get involved for Dad. You could win a brand new Weber grill from Value Home Center for Father's Day, along with a prize pack and a gift card from Country Sweet Chicken and Rib Restaurant. All you got to do, and this is just in time for Father's Day, all you got to do is register for a chance to win. Go to the contest page at WGR550.com. You can enter now through June 9th.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
I don't think their score reflected the work that we put in, you know, and I know this what the scoreboard said at the end of the night, but I felt that, you know, we made them earn it tonight. I thought we showed up and under tough circumstances, and I thought we got efforts from everybody. So that's all you can ask.
Is that
Peter DeBoer, the
Peter
Sharks
DeBoer.
Coach.
I've got a little mini rant for you ready.
Yeah, you're yelling, screaming.
It's just like ridiculous. Sheng Peng has tweeted out, a Sharks reporter at Fear the Fin. Peter DeBoer, the two hardest, heaviest teams are in the final. Everybody talks about skill and speed. There's room for all these small players. There is room for that, but I don't think it's an accident. You know what killed the Sharks?
Yeah, their goaltending.
Their goaltending and not having Erik Karlsson at full strength. The Sharks lost because, checking my notes, notoriously heavy player Erik Karlsson was out of the lineup. He's like, it's an obsession in the NHL. The Bruins coach said, it's not because we're heavy. Mm-hmm. This is not a quote. He talked about how it's because of their puck-moving defensemen, how they move the puck like never before, how they've looked into the analytics about zone entries. The Bruins are not the heaviest team in the world.
They have the reputation of being a heavy team.
They always do.
Yeah.
This would be like if the Ravens won the Super Bowl this year, and you're like, well, how about that defense? And meanwhile, it's Lamar Jackson that did it. I mean, come on. Every single time a team gets knocked out, they've got to talk about how they weren't heavy enough. The Sharks were without Hertl and Karlsson in Game 6, and their goalie was the worst goalie in the playoffs.
Do you know what Martin Jones' save percentage ended up being for the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Hit me.
.898. It's obscenely bad. At a time when goals are harder to come by, right? You shouldn't. Anyway, .898 is awful. He was, for what it's worth, by the way, his previous save percentages in playoffs, .923, .935, .928, .898 this year for the Sharks. So you can analyze a lot of different things, but let's face it, they needed a goalie to come up big. And he didn't come up big enough for them. That's a terrible playoff goal percentage or save percentage. His goals against was a little bit over 3, by the way. That's too high for the playoffs,
sure,
too. But anyway.
Well, that's the kind of thing. They're not about to fire their GM, right?
No, he's been there forever. And they win. They make the playoffs. What? 14 out of 15 years they've made the playoffs with him
right.
as GM.
What was he doing at the deadline?
Not getting a goalie? Yeah.
Right, what do you? And Martin Jones had a game or two that was good. But, right. man, right. you killed your team with a goalie. And they probably should have lost to Vegas. Is Vegas heavy? Vegas is fast, right? Vegas is fast.
Hmm. You know what? I didn't really. I mean, how much Sharks hockey do I watch during the season? You know what his save percentage was during the regular season?
Martin Jones?
Yeah.
It was bad.
.896. What the? WT, you know what? I'm sorry. I just, like
this
I
my,
said,
this is where
not,
I bring
not
my,
a Sharks fan.
My class action lawsuit against the Sharks. What were you doing?
Yeah, why? I mean, you don't usually play guys if their save percentage is under 90.
How could you think this was okay?
Yeah. He had a bad year. It's way under his career average.
Joe Thornton might be the best teammate in the world.
Hmm.
holy cow, you're ruining this these great.
Who moved at the trade deadline, fellas?
Goalies?
Goalies.
Almost nobody. There was talk of Jimmy Howard. There was talk of Ryan Miller.
Yeah.
There was talk of, I'm trying to think who else was out there. Bobrovsky didn't get moved.
Howard was one of the bigger names, right?
I mean, the Sharks were done in, not by being light. Hmm. They were done in by their bad goaltending and by injuries. Like, think of the guys that were, you know, Pavelski, not 100%.
Yeah.
He missed most of the series against Colorado. Colorado, what's Colorado? Are they heavy? They're fast, and they gave the Sharks problems because they're fast, and they scored on the rush. And I mean, just hockey and their obsession with being heavy and strong. It's about moving the puck.
I think that's a playoff thing, and I don't know if that's still an old school thing. I mean, DeBoer's not like it's not like DeBoer is 65 years old, but I think that's a playoff thing. This is the whole Washington was never built for success in the playoffs.
Right,
why?
You wait till
they
the
weren't
series
heavy
is over.
Enough.
And it's not about saying, like, I don't want to be heavy.
Well, you can have some
have
players like that.
Heavier players.
Yeah,
but,
right.
You know, if you're doing the autopsy on the Sharks, it's not that they're not heavy enough.
Well, they put together – I guess you'd be saying, look, they put together a team with a lot of skill, that they were wrong in terms of how they put their team together. But we are talking – they always make the playoffs. This is the age-old question of, is a team, quote, built for the playoffs? And – you know, I think if you just say they're not built for the playoffs, it's a cop-out. It's an excuse. You know, you have some heavy players. You have some skilled players. You have different – it's a mix of guys on your team. If we talk about a goalie whose save percentage for the season was under 90%, that's not good enough. You cannot have that in this day and age in the National Hockey League. You should be at 915 or higher.
I have a ranking of starting the season, the average weight of NHL teams. You want to guess where Boston and St. Louis are?
Top 10.
St. Louis is sixth. Boston is near the bottom.
Near the bottom?
I'm going to say they're like 20, 31, 30, 29, 28, 27, 26, 25, 24, 23. 22. There
Boston,
are 21 teams heavier than Boston.
Boston didn't win because they were heavy. Look, Rask is the, as you said, Rask is the big reason why they win. But why did Boston keep winning? Well, first off, they've got an outstanding line with Bergeron, Marchand, and Pasternak. But what they do? They changed over their defense on the fly. They went from a bigger, slower defense years ago, and they've worked in some younger, puck-moving offensive guys. Krug was like one of the first guys in that bunch.
But they've
changed over the team, and they've added some speed, some quickness, and some defenders who are not, they're not 6'2", 225 pounds, and heavy on the puck. And if you want to take away space, people talk about being heavy on the puck. Okay, use speed. Get on guys. Have guys that can get in quickly on a forecheck and take away space from players. Have defensemen who can avoid forecheck by getting the puck up ice. Make the first pass.
Right.
Take it themselves.
The first question, and you know, this is a conversation we have a lot about wrist alignment too, because the first question shouldn't be, is this person physical? It's, are they good? If the answer is yes, all right, cool. Are they physical?
Yeah.
If the answer is no, then who cares if they're physical? The Bruins, by the way, from a size standpoint, you want big teams. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, so there are 23 teams that are taller than the Bruins, and 21 that are heavier.
Heavier, average weight, yeah.
It's about how you play. Are you good, right? Are you good? Can you? Mitch Marner's not big. He dominates from where he plays. Patrick Kane's not big. He dominates.
Right.
So
look, I don't need Dahlin to go out and knock people around. I need him to really help this offense and be a dynamic defenseman.
Right. And if Dahlin gets knocked out in the playoff round and the Sabres lose, and I hear that it's because they weren't heavy enough. It's like,
no one in Ottawa complained that Erik Karlsson didn't play a heavy game. Right? I know we got to get the break. All right, 803-0550 to join us.
This always ends up sounding like you're against being tough to play against, but just make sure it's the right kind of tough to play against. Mm-hmm. The Sharks were very lucky to get where they got because their goaltending was so bad, and their GM just watched it happen. Mm-hmm. It's stunning to me. If you're a Sharks fan, aren't you calling today? If you're Joe Thornton, how many more?
If he resigns, you're asking for another goalie.
Right. How many more chances does Thornton have?
Yeah.
Burns, the whole team. Carlson's not under contract. It's just, anyway, congratulations to the Blues. Mm. What happened to them? They changed their coach and their goalie got hot.
Yeah, right. Second half. All right, we'll get a quick break in. 803-0550 to join us in the next hour. John Beilein, introduced by the Cleveland Cavaliers yesterday as their new coach. We're going to check in Cleveland with Jason Lloyd, 92.3 The Fan. And we're still talking about Ralph Krueger, the Sabres' new head coach. Ryan Smith played for him in Edmonton. And the former Oiler will join us at 9:30 this morning on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.